Hello, I'm Dr. Carl Regillo, Chief of the Retina Service at Wills Eye Hospital in Philadelphia. Welcome to Medscape Ophthalmology Insights, coming from the Academy of Ophthalmology meeting in New Orleans. This is part of a series of commentaries produced in cooperation between Medscape and Wills Eye Hospital. Joining me today is Dr. Alan Ho and Dr. Sunir Garg of Wills Eye Hospital. Morning, guys.
Morning.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having me.
Great. Dr. Ho is the director of the retina service at Wills Eye, and Dr. Garg is associate professor on the retina service at Wills Eye. We'll be discussing the latest developments in retina presented at this year's meeting. And there's a lot to present, a lot to talk about. It's been an exciting meeting and a lot of new developments. So let's start with wet AMD. Alan, what do you think the biggest developments in wet AMD at this meeting?
The biggest developments in wet AMD at this meeting were, in my opinion, some of the clinical trials speaking to both positive and negative. For example, in the Lucas study, we learned that a treat and extend approach comparing bevacizumab to ranibizumab yielded equivalent results with no new safety concerns. That was important because we previously didn't have a treat and extend study, including that many patients.
Great. Sunir, what did you think was top news in wet AMD?
One of the things that we were hoping was going to pan out was an eye drop used to treat wet macular degeneration. Yeah. Unfortunately, that data didn't look very good, and I don't know that it, at least this current molecule, has much of a future.
I would say that I would agree with the emphasis on that current molecule because there are other eye drop molecules that are in development right now that may be different, and therefore we can't cross that category or that delivery system off for our patients. We certainly need to do something better for the treatment burden of wet AMD.
So you're speaking specifically about pazopanib, the kinase inhibitor eye drop that was tested at phase two. Didn't really show a signal for efficacy. Is that how you took it?
Exactly. We were hoping for more.
What about radiation therapy? Is that going to be part of what we're going to see in the future based on what was presented at this meeting?
There's been a lot of interest in it over the past few years. The current studies suggest that there might be some benefit, but I just don't know that it's really going to change how we treat patients on a day-to-day basis.
And that benefits how? Better vision, decreased treatments?
Decreased treatments. You know, as you know, the patients often have to come in monthly or every other month for treatment, mm-hmm. which becomes a pretty big burden on the patient and their family. And if you can keep them out of the office, that would be great. And that was the hope with radiation, but to me, it wasn't as impressive as I was hoping for.
So how is DARPin looking? You know, we've been hearing a lot about DARPin. It's now in phase two testing. Is that going to be an anti-VEGF agent that's going to give us an extended durability of effect or not? Anything significant?
Potentially. I think what's attractive about the Allergan DARPin program is that that molecule is a different kind of molecule to inhibit VEGF, and they believe that there is increased binding affinity and potentially longer duration. We know that also from the presentation by David Callinan that we still need to do a little work on formulation. So the answers are still out there. We don't know the answers quite yet, but I think there's some promise there. We shall see.
What's the issue with formulation?
The issue with formulation was inflammation that some of the patients had.
Have we seen that decreasing as the formulation's evolving? Is it looking any better now in phase two than phase one?
We think there's a little bit of improvement, but I think they need to improve it more.
Great. Yeah, the Lucas study was much anticipated for quite some time because all we've had is smaller treat and extend style of therapies, and this was the first large prospective one that actually showed treat and extend, whether it be with bevacizumab or ranibizumab, showing very good results. The mean number of treatments in year one was 8, and it achieved visual acuity results that looked pretty good, on par with what you would expect with frequent fixed therapy, as was with ranibizumab and Marina and Anchor, for example. So now let's move on to dry AMD, because now we're also seeing some developments in dry AMD. So, Sunir, what do you think is the top news in dry AMD?
I think there's a lot of great interest in dry AMD. One of the most interesting things to come out of the study is an in-home monitoring system that patients can use. What we found is when patients present earlier, we can treat them earlier, and they generally do better. So there's currently a product that's been looked at called the 4C Home product that seems to show great promise in detecting these lesions earlier than we've otherwise been able to catch them.
So this is a home monitoring device that people use instead of the usual way they follow their vision at home, which is what, AMSA grid and whatever?
Exactly. So when patients went home, we basically told them to cover one eye at a time, look at a piece of paper with some lines on it and tell us if they saw any changes, whereas this system will alert the patient that there's been a change even before they notice a change at home when they're reading.
Great.
It's a very refined detection system. It transforms the paper to technology that, in this study, they stopped the study early because patients who were in the monitored technology arm actually had improved visual outcomes.
And that's a big deal to stop a study early, especially for something positive, which was patients were being detected with CNV, that conversion of CNV, when their vision was only minimally affected compared to the standard, which they saw more vision loss. That was presented at this meeting. That is, I agree, a big development. What about treating dry AMD in terms of slowing the progression of atrophy? What came out of the meeting here?
Well, there are two things that we learned about in terms of dry AMD, and one was the ARDS2 information that has been talked about before. We know that there's been a formulation change. I think the great controversy from this meeting, and I don't know that it will be resolved in the future because we're probably not going to do another large-scale prospective trial, is whether or not you can individualize therapy based on a patient's genetics. Carlo, compelling presentation. Emily Chu, another compelling presentation. I don't know how we're going to resolve this, but certainly time will tell. I do believe, though, that the force of personalized medicine is present in other specialties, and at some point down the line, we'll need to address this.
So there's some controversy here. I mean, the controversy is whether genetic testing at this time plays a role with our patients in fine-tuning the way we manage dry AMD, right?
I think that's exactly right. Now, the question is personalized medicine right for dry macular degeneration with our current therapy? And I think over time we'll find that there's certain indications for it, but right now for the dry macular degeneration patients, I just don't see it happening.
Are we going to have resolution to this controversy anytime soon?
Not in the near future, and not for dry macular degeneration as we understand it today.
Retina specialists will determine this, how they practice. And currently, I'm still not doing genetic testing routinely for my patients with dry AMD.
All right, anti-factor D, the Mahalo study. It's received quite a bit of attention at the ASRS meeting a couple months ago, was the top line, and at this meeting we saw an additional genetic analysis. What does it mean to you?
First of all, this study is impactful because whenever you have a list of different strategies to approach a disease, for example, atrophic AMD, you know you don't want to have one good treatment. This is the first treatment, actually, to show some slowing of progression of the growth of geographic atrophy. The vitamin studies didn't. The ARDS studies 1 and 2 did not show this. Mm-hmm. So it's the first study. And in fact, it's also, you can consider it a little surprising because other complement studies have failed to show this to date. So the study that you presented, Carl, was very impactful because we finally have some hope, although the differences weren't great, a 20% reduction in growth of the area of geographic atrophy at 18 months is not great. The genetic subtype at 44% difference, I think, is potentially significant and could have traction for our patients with atrophy and for the practicing retina doctor.
Yeah, I'm very excited, too. I mean, this is the first time not only a drug to slow the progression of dry AMD has shown a benefit in clinical testing. This is phase 2. It's a small study. Take it with all those caveats. The genetic analysis seems to make sense, and it seems to amplify the effect of the drug. So the genetic polymorphism that was identified in this study is CFI, complement factor I, and those patients seem to be driving the results, and the medicine's called lampalizumab. It's a humanized antibody fragment injected in the eye that targets factor D. So
as importantly as that genetic specific complement factor I was the one that was found, I think the fact that it was found in more than half the patients in the study means that it could be meaningful in terms of numbers for our patients. So I'm excited about the possibilities. On the other hand, I'll balance that statement by saying, if you're a patient with geographic atrophy and you're losing vision, when your doctor presents you with potentially this medication down the line, you'll be saying, I'm still losing vision. And we'll be in the situation of having to say, let's do this treatment because you'll be losing less. Recall our early treatment days in wet AMD.
It's still a promising development for sure. What about DME? Sunir, what do you think?
A lot of excitement in DME. New data came out looking at Ozurdex, which is a slow-release steroid implant for the treatment of diabetic macular edema, which is the leading cause of vision loss in patients with diabetes. And what it found was that for many patients, four shots is all they required over 2 years to get meaningful visual improvement, and that improvement was sustained for that period of time. So for working-age adults who otherwise would have to come in monthly for treatment, I perhaps can see them once a quarter or so, give them an injection, keep them functioning well, and keep them seeing well, and more importantly, avoid them from taking time off of work.
So we've had steroids for a while. How's the safety profile? How did it look in this phase 3 study?
Very impressive. So unlike some of the other steroids that we use, the pressure rise or the glaucoma issue here is really not such a big concern anymore. The probability of people needing to have surgery after this was really low. And most of the time, if the pressure went up, it was easily treated with some drops. Cataracts are a bit more of an issue. Many of the patients who receive this will develop a cataract and need to have surgery over 2 years. But for a lot of the patients who are older, who already have some cataract anyway, getting cataract surgery a few months or a year sooner than you otherwise would might not be such a big deal.
So what do you think the likelihood of having Ozurdex FDA approved and available for us to use for DME will be in the near future?
I think it's pretty good. The data is under review by the FDA. It'll be hopefully up for a vote in April. And so hopefully we'll have it available to our patients by the summer of next year.
And the other potentially new FDA-approved treatment is aflibercept. Alan, the studies there?
The studies there are surprisingly consistent to what we saw in RISE and RIDE with ranibizumab. And ranibizumab works, Eylea works. And Diana Doe made an excellent presentation to show that we'll have something else in our toolbox for patients with DME down the line. I think we really need the steroids in there as well. That is an important statement and important results from the MEAD trial, and I hope that does go through.
Yeah, I certainly welcome additional options to treat our patients with DME. Another anti-VEGF agent, a good steroid that seems to have a good safety profile. It's very exciting. So we've covered all the big diseases, but we still have lots of unmet needs and other diseases that are severe and vision-threatening. What about retinal degenerations?
It's very exciting for patients with retinal degeneration. The Argus II study showed that the Argus II vision system, that is the epiretinal chip implant, really has been reasonably well tolerated and shows probable benefit for patients with severe vision loss. For example, patients with bare light perception to no light perception and retinitis pigmentosa now have an FDA-approved, commercially available device that may allow them to see a door, connect to the visual world a little bit more. And our subject, as you know, she's able to take her laundry and look at a piece of clothing and sort whether it's a white piece of clothing or dark or color.
Yeah, that it is exciting. It's FDA approved. It's technically commercially available now. What are the obstacles? Can we use it right now?
Well, we can use it now. In fact, the first commercial implant will probably occur before the end of 2013. Insurance coverage is evolving, and I think that's one of the barriers.
And surgeon training, right?
Surgeon training, yeah.
It's not your average vitreoretinal procedure.
There are about 10 centers across the country that will be doing this.
Yeah, and we're doing some exciting work at Wills with other types of retinal prosthesis, and Sunir is involved in that. So I think this is just the beginning of a whole area that's going to open up within the next decade.
That's one of the most exciting things about this implant is there's a bunch of different centers worldwide that are working on these implants, and to have one now FDA approved, I think will just encourage the other centers to work even harder to get their implants to market, and that competition, I think, will really help to blossom this technology.
Now, real niche field, gene therapy. We heard a number of talks about gene therapy, either to replace a missing gene or to promote the development of a therapeutic in the eye for wet AMD, for severe retinal degenerations like RPE65. What's happening there?
Gene therapy will be a part of our treatment toolbox for patients with a variety of conditions. Al McGuire's work on LCA, fascinating. Jeff Heyer's work with introducing a gene that'll produce an anti-VEGF that might reduce the need for injections as we do now is very clever as well. We need more information, but I think it's showing that there's going to be some traction with gene therapy.
Time frame? This is not the near horizon, though, right? I mean, we're making progress, but are we talking 5, 10 years? What sort of timeline here?
I would say within the next 2 to 3 years, I think we could have a real gene therapy available.
That is a big development. So we've had a new therapeutic for about a year now, and we're starting to get some real-world experience with aquaplasmin for treating vitreoretinal interface disorders. We've heard about the phase 3 studies, but now at this meeting we're starting to hear about post-marketing, you know, commercially available use of the drug by us. There's been over 4,300 injections done in the United States this past year, and we heard a little bit about the experience, the positive and the side effects and so forth. What are we hearing at this meeting, Sunir?
I think this data is really helpful. It basically confirmed what we found in the phase 3 trial, which is the drug works and it's really quite safe. There was a few patients who may experience some transient vision loss, but most of them recover vision very quickly. There's an occasional patient in whom it seems like the vision loss may last a little bit longer, and we need longer follow-up on those patients. But I think this data encourages retina specialists to continue to use this modality as a new treatment option for their patients.
Yeah, this surveillance is important because the phase 3 study only had 6 months of follow-up. So for those patients that were still having some ongoing issues, whether it be decreased vision or visual symptoms to some degree, even with successful treatment of with the drug itself, that longer-term follow-up is important. It's sort of like vitrectomy surgery for a macular hole. We'll still see continued vision improvement well beyond 6 months, and that sort of phenomenon could exist here too. Well, that's all we have time for today. There's really been a lot to talk about, but we'll have many more meetings sorting out a lot of these interesting points and new developments. I'd like to thank Dr. Sunir Garg, Dr. Alan Ho from Will's Eye. I'm Dr. Carl Regillo from Medscape Ophthalmology and Will's Eye Hospital. Thank you for joining us.